Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. One of my favorite people is back with us today. He has been a real champion in a world of disinformation, actual disinformation, putting out the truth everywhere he can. He is also the Surgeon General of Florida, and he is Dr. Joseph Latipo. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thanks. Thanks, Mel.
Well, first and foremost,
welcome to Florida.
I know. I've been threatened for a long time. It just got so bad in New York and times shifted. And we came down to the free state where you are keeping people healthy and informed. Thank God. And I wanted to just talk a little bit for anyone that doesn't know you yet, which they should. And we'll talk a little bit about you, what's going on. I do want to get into your book because it's really important right now that people understand the psychological aspects of what we're dealing with. So if you could tell my audience a little bit about you and your background, and then we'll get into it.
Sure. Well, I am the author of Transcend Fear. I'm a dad, a very happy dad to three wonderful boys with just the most wonderful wife in the world, my wife, Brianna. And we live in the St. Pete area, which is beautiful. I mean, it's a fake screen behind me, but it actually looks like this in many parts of the of the county down there. And I'm a professor. I have a medical degree from Harvard, a PhD from Harvard. I'm a professor here at the University of Florida, and I also have the pleasure and the honor of serving as the Surgeon General of Florida and working with Governor DeSantis and working to really try and support good health in Florida for Floridians, and also supporting truth, where we've seen instead a lot of scientific corruption and political corruption and just common sense corruption.
Yeah, and you're also a very skilled data person that early on was looking at the data that was coming out during COVID, and kind of, I believe you were one of the first people in the country to signal the alarm that what we were seeing was not necessarily what was actually going on. So at what point in the COVID operation, as I call it, did you start to see some red flags and think, you know, something's not right here?
Just really pretty much early. I was working at the time at UCLA. So I was a professor at UCLA at that time, working in LA, Los Angeles, which also has places that look like the background here, even though unfortunately it's some of the leadership there just is just hell bent on ruining the beauty and the freedom of California. But I was working at UCLA, and I was actually working in the hospital during the week that Governor Newsom shut down the state, and I took care of COVID patients and saw firsthand the mayhem and really the angst and anxiety in the hospital and the really the fear-based decision making in the hospital. And you know, it was obvious that it was wrong. People like to say that we didn't know, and that's true. We didn't know everything, but even at that point, we already had good data from Wuhan. I actually remember before I came on service, watching a Grand Rounds presentation at MGH, the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston, that included individuals, doctors from Wuhan, who were talking about their experience taking care of patients. And there was already data on case fatality rates. So it was, you know, it was a lot of the, essentially all of the critical data that we needed to make good decisions about at least how to initially manage the pandemic was already present, even though, again, people like to pretend that it wasn't present at the beginning, but it was present.
And what did you see right away? Because in the beginning, you know, the story was, I was in New York and it was chaos. And the story in the beginning was really not pushing early treatment. It was not pushing anything. It was kind of like, well, when you are really sick, then come to the hospital. And that was probably the biggest early mistake, was not treating it early. What did you see that? Did you see that there were options for early treatment that were not being used in your own world?
Oh, yeah, Mel. And actually, Mel, it was even actually much worse than that, Mel, because, you know, people fuss about therapies, you know, people fuss about what they believe is probably effective and what they believe isn't effective. And those debates happen. And unfortunately, those debates have been politicized such that you have doctors who have a good experience with the medication being told by, you know, college graduates in English with an English background that they're wrong. So it's just completely politicized that field. But actually, Mel, I'll tell you that scientifically, something much worse happened, which is that our leadership as a country, our scientific institutes did a terrible job of doing what they should have been doing, which was more aggressively testing different possible treatment options. Like if we had taken that approach, which is what we should have done, and it just consists of testing different medications on people, supporting the establishment of clinical trials in multiple locations geographically, and doing it early. And you know, eventually the federal government caught up and has been sponsoring some trials, but like way too late when people were devastated the most and when society was harmed the most. There was, you know, they wanted to really tell people how to stay at home and wear masks and things like that. But they could have supported, we completely have the scientific infrastructure to have supported aggressive clinical trial implementation early on. Yep. And we would have had good answers because a lot of people were, during surges, were testing positive. So it would have been really easy to execute protocols for many different treatment options.
Right.
And that could have been done and it wasn't done. It's another really sad example of how the pandemic was just completely mismanaged. And a lot of people died who didn't need to die.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And the UCLA and that entire system there, and a lot of hospitals all over the country, people don't understand that a lot of the hospitals are owned by multinational corporations. They're not, they think they're going to a hospital that is an individual hospital that's this and that. But it appears that a lot of the protocols and a lot of the what you were allowed to do, certainly the remdesivir, all of this was coming from a way higher place than the actual doctors. Did you feel pressure when you were there to not veer from what was coming from the leadership of the hospitals and all of that?
Oh yeah. Definitely. And it's partly because, you know, I worked as a researcher and a clinician at UCLA, but I was an employee. And that shift in doctors from being independent practitioners to being employees, there have been benefits, right? Some doctors don't want to deal with paperwork. Billing's a nightmare. Insurance companies are a nightmare. Dealing with the regulatory climate is a nightmare. So many doctors don't want to deal with that, and they choose an employment route. And for me, I mostly do research, and so I need to be with an institute, and that's what I was. I was a professor at a research institute at UCLA. But what you lose is that you lose that independence, you lose that autonomy, and frankly, you know, you lose the ability to do what you think is clinically appropriate. Because when you work at an institution, well, everyone needs to get on the same page with this institution. And unfortunately, as we saw during the pandemic, I mean, the institutions by and large are in terribly corrupt when it comes to issues of ethics. They would absolutely rather go along with what everyone else is doing than risk going along with what is actually the right thing to do. You know, they care about reputations way more than they care about patients.
Yeah, and it's become incredibly obvious that that's the case. So then you saw the rollout of the vaccine, and that's when I first saw you. because you came out and you were saying, you know, I'm not so sure that everyone should be taking this. I don't know what right. what is going on here. And, you know, obviously putting yourself out there was a risk for you, but it actually was helpful to the rest of the country. So when the vaccine started rolling out, what were you looking at that was making you think, you know, why are we vaccinating everyone? And what is this push? Because it wasn't organic. It was a forced vaccine.
Yeah, it's just such an ugly, you know, as we're talking about it, Mel, I'm just thinking back to that period of time. It was such an ugly period of time where people were being just actively manipulated. Yeah. You know, this idea of free choice and informed consent and just making decisions that you think are best for you, like all of that was out the window. As the vaccine was coming out and the data came out about its initial effectiveness, and that's a whole nother story there, you know, 8 shots later. Right. But as they were coming out, yeah, I was blown away just hearing these doctors talk about everyone has to get this. And, you know, they're almost priming the pump. They're sort of pressing on the consciousness of everyone that it has to be this way. And I was just thinking, no, it doesn't have to be that way. You know? Right. It could be like, if you want it, you can get it. And then we can go on with life. Like, and so just seeing this, just all the craziness and the oppressiveness that people were really ginning up I was very disturbed by it. I mean, I'm thinking back to that time, and around that time, I ended up writing an article that fortunately the Wall Street Journal accepted that said just what you're saying, which is that, you know, I said that, look, it's a lot smarter to just let the people who want it go get it, who feel they can't live without it, go right. get it, rather than this whole everyone's got to get it, because that's going to create conflict, right. and it's going to be conflict that is unnecessary and harmful. And you know, I wrote that it didn't matter. The people like, oh, what do you mean? Everyone has to get it. I can't believe right. you're saying that. You're such a bad person. Da, da, da. But you know, and now, right, 8 shots later, however many we're at, and how many adverse events and all this other bad stuff. And now this recent discussion about the DNA fragments, the billions of DNA fragments that are within each dose in the presence of lipid nanoparticles and in the absence of any deliberate safety studies of risks associated with that.
Yeah. What are the risks associated with that? Because here's the crazy part. I believe that we still have not. Remember that Pfizer early on, maybe Moderna too, they didn't want to put out the ingredients in the vaccines for like 65 years or something. And we're all watching that thinking, well, that's weird. And then there was all this talk about the nanoparticles and the mRNA and all of this. And it got very confusing and very, you know, one article came out, then another one contradicted it, and another one, and then the thought police are jumping in that, you know, aren't even doctors. So what
misinformation?
I know it's just, and the fact checkers, you know, that are paid by Big Pharma and Bill Gates. But what is it? What are you talking about? So the audience knows, with the DNA and the nanoparticles and all of that, that is proven now. Then it was like, if you even questioned it, you were the problem or I was the problem. But what is that? What is that? And what should people know now?
Yeah, so this is a very important issue. And unfortunately, with these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, pretty much all the news has been bad news. I mean, you know, early on it was the myocarditis. Right. And later it became clear that it was the myocarditis was even a more expansive problem because there was subclinical myocarditis. Meanwhile, there was data for increased risk of different thromboembolic events. Most recently, an analysis performed by the FDA scientists found this signal for stroke risk in older Americans, again, from them, particularly when they're co-administered with the influenza vaccine. We've seen evidence of it being present in breast milk. There's evidence of changes to the menstrual cycle in women with these vaccines. And it's just, I mean, the list goes on and on. Now, more recently, we've seen now multiple studies that provide evidence of negative effectiveness, which is to say that there are, these studies show that people who are receiving them after some months are now at increased risk of contracting COVID-19 rather than decreased risk. And that's been, again, multiple studies that have shown that, never acknowledged by the CDC or the FDA. So it's just, it's really, unfortunately, just one bad thing after the other. Yeah. Most recently, there's a new issue, or it's really an issue that was identified months ago, but it's getting more attention now. And there's been some really good reporting in the Epoch Times and by others that have been sending questions to the FDA, Health Canada, which is the equivalent of the FDA in Canada, and the European Medicines Agency. And these questions relate to the presence of fragments of DNA in the mRNA vaccines and the safety of that in the presence of lipid nanoparticle technology. And there's also concern about a particular DNA fragment, which is a piece of the SV40 or simian virus 40 virus that specifically enhances the transcription of DNA. So I know that's a mouthful, so I'm just going to try and distill it down.
Right.
So the presence of DNA in a biologic product is not unusual at all. And that is because the processes for creating some substances can lead to DNA contamination. And it just has to do with how the bacteria that are used to create the substance that is, in this case, it's RNA, but really this is true for many different other types of vaccines and other substances. So that process that involves using a bacteria and a piece of DNA in the bacteria to help create something else, some other substance, some drug, insulin it could be, for example. Okay. You know, in that process, you want the insulin, so you purify it, but you never get 100% of the DNA out of that mixture.
Okay.
And that happens. That's normal. And fortunately, the data so far indicate that that is safe. And what do I mean by safe? So I'll say, first of all, let's start really simple. So is the drug being eaten, or is it being injected? If it's being eaten, there's no risk. Okay. There's basically no risk. And this is because DNA, fortunately, is not a very robust structure. So it breaks down easily. It's just not very robust. So all the acids, the process of digestion, there's no risk. If it's being injected, there's more risk because you don't have the acids of the stomach and the enzymes to break it down there. But fortunately, because DNA is a pretty flimsy complex, it's broken down pretty easily by the body. It doesn't even make it into the cells for the most part. It's hard to get in. Okay. However, because there is a theoretical risk that the DNA that is a contaminant in these, you know, whether it's insulin that's being created or some other compound that's being created, because the DNA itself has a theoretical risk of two basic things. One is actually integrating into our DNA, the human DNA, and the other is causing some type of toxicity to our DNA, where maybe something's altered and it potentially increases the risk of cancer being developed or something like that. Because there's some risk to that, the FDA in the past has issued guidance for how to mitigate those risks, how to quantify those risks and how to navigate those risks. So that's like a known risk. And fortunately, it hasn't practically demonstrated itself to be a risk that we really need to consider seriously. The processes are good for purifying the whatever it is you're trying to get, like insulin and minimizing DNA and all that.
Right.
So that was all fine, or at least appears to be fine, pre-COVID-19 vaccines. What's very different now is that the DNA that is contaminating, that's a contaminant in these mRNA vaccines, is not DNA that just is like old DNA. Instead, most likely it's DNA that's being taken up by the lipid nanoparticle complexes. And the lipid nanoparticle complexes are the most efficient non-virus based delivery system that we have in existence at this point for DNA, RNA, those types of molecules. So now, almost certainly what's happening is that in the past, you know, the DNA is not coming into the cells, it's flimsy, it's breaking down, all that risk is minimal.
Right.
Now, almost certainly what we have is that the DNA, probably in quite large quantities, is coming into cells. And the risk is, well, we don't know what the risk is. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
That's a very big problem.
Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, and my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now, and I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends, and I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing.
Yeah. And what's scary is, you know, there's been a lot of talk. I wonder if this is true. I've done some shows on different kind of technologies, CRISPR technology, some of this nanotechnology, some of this biology, like these shots and other things. Is there a risk of altering one's DNA that they were born with, their natural DNA, with this concoction between the nanoparticles and the DNA particles? Can it affect the DNA that, you know, God gave you, that is in your body? Is there a chance of manipulating, you know, actually what you are inside? Is that a maybe something that could happen here?
Yeah, there's a theoretical risk of that. And I'll say that risk is not a new risk, because as I mentioned, there are other, you know, there are other drugs that people put in their bodies that right. have some degree of DNA contamination.
Right.
The real problem here is that, you know, that we don't know. It's one thing for the risk to be minimal, and so far that's what it seems to be with everything else.
Right.
But we have no idea here, and that's obviously a huge problem. because we don't know if this is something that's happening. We don't know how the frequency with which it's happening. We don't know how it's happening. There are no published studies, to the best of my knowledge, that characterize this. Right. And you're absolutely right. Well, what's the point? Why is there even a concern? Well, there's a concern because of exactly what you're saying. We don't want to be modifying the human DNA, certainly not without people's consent. What people are signing up for when they choose to get a vaccine for against an infectious disease. And then, you know, to add on to that, I mean, it's one thing if it's modified in someone who is not having children, for example, and there's still potential risk. The concern, the primary concern in that type of individual is that you might activate a mutation that leads to development of cancer. But in someone who, say, is younger and having children, you know, if there is DNA integration into germline cells, and those are, you know, eggs in women, sperm in men, then you're talking about changing someone's genome in a way that is heritable, in a way that they can pass on. And nothing's risk free, and I get that, but there's a difference between, like, seeing that there's risk and trying to understand that risk and quantifying it.
Right.
And there's a difference between that and just saying, oh, no, it's fine. We've given it to billions of people. We don't have evidence. There's no evidence that there's, you know, there's no evidence. There's no evidence, that's just no thanks. Not Frankenstein. We're not guinea pigs.
That's what it seems like, though, right? Because I had on Dr. Hooker, I don't know if you know him, from Children's Health Defense. Yeah. And he was talking about, now this is in different species, not necessarily in humans, but in what we're talking about, in changing the genome in this way with it, mRNA or whatever, that if that continues and it evolves down the line, eventually that plant or animal is no longer what was original, because it continues to mutate and change over time. And like you said, there's been no informed consent for people to say, like, you know, your kid might not be the DNA they would be had you not taken this and just had a husband and wife and have a child naturally. So this seems to me a real, because, you know, there's the whole world out there of transhumanists and people that are trying to do all kinds of things. You see Brula up there at the World Economic Forum talking about taking a pill that then has something in it that tells your doctor when you take it. And he's laughing and he's like, imagine the surveillance. I mean, there's a real threat in people's minds of A, what they were injected with, and B, how could it change them? And then you have these guys up there that seem like mad scientists and people that say, well, if there's the technology, we should use it. Good or bad, we should use it. And this technocracy mentality of, like, let's kind of humans 2.0. And I think that that's where people look at this and think, what is this about? And you know, really going against, and we'll get into your book because it's an important part of the story. It really goes against what God-fearing, God-loving humans want and believe on a mass scale. And these people don't seem to care. And then you're forced to do a protocol and you're thinking, well, what could go wrong? A lot could go wrong.
No, you're absolutely correct, Mel, that, you know, there are people who think it's fine to edit the genome in ways that align with their vision of what humans should be, right? That humans should eat less meat, or humans should, you know, whatever, be a certain height or be a certain color or have certain other preferences.
Right.
And there are people who believe that. And it's, like, profoundly unethical. I mean, you just can't believe in God and then run around and dismissing, you know, the beauty of what God has created,
the
sanctity of what God has created. We are not, you know, we are creator beings, But our purpose is not to create humans.
Hybrid. Now,
our purpose is create humans in our image, I should say. Yeah, that's not we are creator beings, but that's not part of the part of what we're supposed to be creating.
Yeah, well, a lot of these guys that came up with this vaccine and the entire, as far as I can see from Event 201, the entire protocol from beginning to end, they actually I think do believe that they are gods and they believe that experimenting on a few billion humans is their right. And if it wasn't for people like you, they would have very little pushback. So I will also want to ask about, before we get into fear and that the part that is playing, not just what's happening with all of this, but with the pending, you know, the drum roll, which I'm hearing, and the mask coming back and this coming back and the slow march of, you know, we have an election coming, so roll out another strain. But now a lot of people are very concerned about the spike proteins and all of that. What is that about? And is there anything people can do about this? Is that a major concern? Or is more the concern the manipulation of your cells and all of that? So I don't really fully understand the spike protein thing, but a lot of people ask about it. So I just wanted you to kind of just tap on that a second.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to do that. And it's all a concern. So the bigger issue, Mel, is that we actually don't even know as much as we should know about, for example, the spike protein, its persistence in some people, and the potential effects of that. That's the part that honestly it makes my heart so sad that that so much of the scientific community and certainly the infrastructure of science in this country has decided that it's more important to protect the reputation of a vaccine program or these particular vaccines than it is to ask and answer the questions that are important for humanity and for human health. So with the spike protein, I know that there is a concern among some doctors, many doctors, that the spike protein itself is toxic, that it causes toxicity in human beings, that it may be behind what's happening with the myocarditis, that it may be behind what's happening with the vascular complications that sometimes occur after mRNA COVID-19 vaccination. I'll tell you that in terms of published work that I'm familiar with that seems to provide some insights, there was a really good study published in the journal Circulation by some researchers at Harvard and the MGH, Massachusetts General Hospital. Mm-hmm. And what this group did is they looked at adolescents who developed myocarditis, and they compared them to adolescents who did not develop myocarditis. And they performed a battery of different tests. And the primary finding that came out is that the individuals who did develop myocarditis, and these were acute cases of myocarditis, had persistent spike protein in their bloodstream or their tissues after vaccination. So at time points where, say, the spike protein might be undetectable or just extremely low in someone who was healthy, in these individuals, it was persistently elevated. And it's not definitive, but that obviously is a concern that it's directly contributing to at least some of the injury that we see. It's not definitive. Again,
Is it
the spike protein? Right. Is it a marker for a different process that's happening? So it does seem to be potentially a pathogenic molecule that contributes to the illnesses, the complications that some people experience. Right. Now, in terms of research there, again, it's another thing that just breaks my heart that we just don't have more institutionally supported research into individuals who have had adverse events after these vaccines. Right. Yale's actually doing some work, and I'm glad they're doing it. They're enrolling individuals who have both long COVID symptoms after contracting COVID-19, but also who have symptoms that are consistent with injuries from the COVID-19 vaccines. Right. For example, neuropathy, small fiber neuropathy. They're doing some work there, and thank goodness, but it's completely ridiculous. You know, you've used hundreds of millions of these injections.
Right. They have hundreds of millions of people to choose from. Right. And you know how many people would be involved in the study if they even put out a call. So it's like,
right.
You can't.
You got Yale, you know, doing some stuff. Like, you know, what about Harvard? Right. What about, you know, what about UCLA? What about more of the universities? What about Hopkins? I mean, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
But it does seem that it contributes potentially to complications that people have. And in terms of what to do about it, honestly, you know, Dr. Peter McCullough is a good friend of mine.
Right.
And I love Peter, and I appreciate some people are just very gifted physicians. They're really good at understanding healing and illness. And I know he has some protocols that he recommends. And when people ask me, oh, what should I do? When was the last time people took a vaccine? And so many people say, I wish I hadn't. And how do I get this out of me? He has some protocols, and I tell people I don't know, but I refer them to him.
Me too. I know Dr. McCullough, and he's a partner of ours at the wellness company as well. And they are working very hard over there to do that. And for anyone watching this, you go to my partner's page, you can click on and go see what Dr. McCullough is doing over there at the wellness company. But you are actually working with an entire state and, God willing, with the entire country after 2024. But I have two questions that I think are really important. First is a lot of concern out there. They are pushing, the same people, the same media are pushing right now to get the current flu vaccine with another booster of the COVID vaccine. I've seen signs all over New York saying to get both of them right now. A lot of people are concerned, is that flu vaccine modified now? Is that mRNA, A and B, taking both of those vaccines, is that doubly dangerous? And most people that didn't take the COVID vaccine are done with flu vaccines as well. So what's the relationship between the flu vaccine and the COVID vaccine and the danger there? Because there are people out there. I see a big campaign right now, especially because I get a lot of stuff from New York still, of them pushing not to get your COVID booster, but to get both your COVID booster and the flu vaccine right now and for free, quote unquote.
Yeah. So they will, unfortunately, FDA, CDC, and the lovers of this, you know, vaccine and movement with the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines will sacrifice anything at its altar. And what we're seeing is them trying to sacrifice the flu vaccine at its altar. So the flu, while doctors will tell you that the idea is to, you know, boost flu rates and maybe to even decrease the number of visits and that people have to make.
Right.
The intention behind this is nothing related to that. The intention behind this is to normalize the mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. That is all these are about. It's not about the flu vaccine. It is literally COVID-19 vaccines.
That makes so much sense because it's been confusing. I'm watching this. I'm thinking, what are they doing?
It is. They will throw grandma on the train tracks if it gets more people taking these terrible mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. They do not care.
It is shocking. And
that's what it's about. And, you know, and yeah, I'm sure it's hurting flu rates. I have no doubt it's hurting flu vaccine rates. And right now, the flu vaccine is still developed with conventional technology, but Moderna is trying to create an mRNA flu vaccine that no one's going to want.
Right. Exactly. And I see that a lot, listen, the numbers have dropped dramatically for people that are even willing to get any more boosters. And we've seen a lot of people die. And I don't necessarily like that people jump right to, you know, the conclusion or did they take the vaccine or not. But what I do see, and I wonder if you see this, is the mainstream media, at least, I see them as little as possible because of what I do. I have to see it. And then people send me stuff and I do a show with a scientist. A lot of the talking points now just talk pre and post COVID. They don't differentiate if they're talking about the vaccine. They don't differentiate if they're talking about people that got COVID or anything. They're putting it all into, when they put a news story out now, it's just basically post COVID and like all the things that happened post COVID. So you'll see, like, they'll say, this person had complications post COVID. And then you're left to think, well, were they vaccinated or not? Like, what is the other side of the story? Do you notice that kind of like propaganda going on where they're just kind of acting like, well, the vaccine didn't make a difference. It was just all lumped under COVID. Cause I think that's very deceptive. And I see it more and more out of these, you know, the mainstream type media.
Yeah, totally agree, Mel. And I agree with you. It's like, just, you know, they, people don't, you know, members of the media don't want people thinking about COVID-19 vaccine injury. I'll give you another example that annoyed the heck out of me the other day. There's a site called MedPage Today, and they produce news in the medical space. Mm-hmm. You know, they cover new studies, they cover conferences, scientific conferences, they cover policy changes, they cover legal issues. And sometimes they send, in addition to their news stories and their reporting, which is very like pro-mRNA, blah, 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 blah. They also send summaries about comments people make about articles. And they recently, there's a guy, I think his Dr. Plotkin, I think his name is. And sadly, so he is a vaccine scientific vaccine giant in this country. I think he's at Mayo. He heads their, you know, Institute for Vaccine Science or something like that. Right. But he's a senior guy. And unfortunately, this poor guy developed tinnitus really badly after his mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. And he's written about how it's affected his quality of life.
Yeah.
And everything he said implies that he believes very strongly it was his vaccine that did it. And here he is, but at the same time, he talks about not wanting to, wanting to spur vaccine hesitancy. And, you know, and so the article, the comments in that article, the email I got highlighted comments where people were saying, oh, well, who knows whether it was, you know, you can't tell whether it was the vaccine that did it. And, you know, tinnitus is such a common diagnosis. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing to take from someone getting it after the vaccine. And I was looking at it and I thought, these comments are kind of odd. So I went to the article and I looked at the comments in the article, and actually, like, almost all the comments are about people saying, you know, something similar happened to me.
Right.
And these are doctors that are mostly commenting, doctors, healthcare workers, doctors, nurses. And, you know, they're saying, you know, yeah, it same thing happened to me, or, you know, my symptoms got worse after the mRNA COVID-19 vaccine. That's actually what most of the comments are. Right. But they curated their email so that you don't see any of that. Any of the comments where people were saying things about the incidence of injury, the need for more studies, the need for treatment. And unfortunately, I mean, some people, you know, literally have suicidal thoughts because of this constant ringing.
I know about people that have that. I know people that think that they got it from that I've heard of too. And also, that's so deceptive. And that makes me think, because we didn't know, most people in America or the planet did not know about the back end, like Gavi and the Gates Foundation and what happened at Event 201 and a lot of these different people that were these billionaire, you know, people that are involved in all of this that were funding a lot of the journals, a lot of the medical websites, a lot of the funding the media, a lot of Bill Gates and Pfizer and all of them, they give a lot of money to the media. So what's happened is a total loss of trust, which is why I think you've become so much more important, because you were never intimidated by what would happen to you. As far as I've watched you for almost 4 years, is somebody that's going to stand up and stand out. And that takes me to your book, Transcending Fear. And I think that you were also an early person that saw the manipulation of fear and of panic and of what they were doing to people on a grand scale. And you know, you can see it, like you're talking about that email and then the selective, it's not true, it's not true. And it's been so widespread. And yet you stood up to your own peril, even though you gained a lot from it, you were greatly attacked. And people are very scared of that. I think people are most scared, honestly, of public humiliation or being attacked publicly. Mm-hmm. But then they see somebody like you do it and you end up being not just right, but saving, I think, a lot of lives. So just talk a little bit about why you wrote your book and your book a little and why it matters that people transcend fear and take a step back and don't like live in that emotional mind when it comes to their health and what is happening here.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. Yeah, those you actually, your words are carry a lot of meaning. So this is actually just happened to be, I'm at my desk, so I have a copy of it. Although I think it's backwards. I'm looking at it.
It looks right on my screen. It just looks backwards.
Okay, all right. So that's the book.
Yeah, and, it's a great book. Really important.
You said public humiliation, and you're totally right. And whether it's public humiliation or it's some other fear that people have, unfortunately, those are avenues by which we can each be manipulated.
Yes.
When we do have that going on, when we're running those. You know, when we're running those programs, right? I don't want to be humiliated, right. Or I don't want to canceled. Be, I don't want to be canceled, or I don't want, you know, I don't want people to dislike me or right. to think bad things about me. Those are all avenues that that open us up to manipulation, to control by forces that, you know, have completely different interests than our well-being. And I know it's not easy. And I definitely have had most of my life, I lived just like that. And in the book, I talk about my experience of getting out of that. And I personally ended up working with a Navy SEAL who was a very talented healer. And, you know, and through methods of like the science of Chinese medicine helped me with like my meridians and the flow of chi through my body. So stuff right. I didn't even believe was a thing until right. I worked with them right before the pandemic. But they're totally a thing. And those things help me. And that's like why I wrote the book, because I want people who want the same to at least know about one avenue okay. by which you can achieve freedom. Right. And freedom is freedom from fear and freedom from shame and freedom from, you know, freedom from anger and freedom from doubt. So that's a way to, you know, to have more freedom and to be able to do whatever it is you should do that, you know, in your heart is the right thing to do. And, you know, we definitely need more of that. None of this nonsense, of course, would have happened if we had enough of it.
Right.
But at this point.
Yeah.
Hopefully I mean, it won't happen again.
Yeah. Well, that's what we hope. That's why we'd like people to get your book, because there's another part of this with breathing and with mindfulness, but also with, you know, knowing when you're triggered emotionally, because I see the cognitive warfare. I read this whole terrifying NATO document about using people's minds as weapons, and DARPA's all involved, and it's very advanced. This has been going on since Nazi Germany, you know, this kind of, cognitive warfare, they call it, and it's out there and it's being used, in my opinion. I'm watching these kids in the streets marching, and you know, and all over the world, and you're thinking, like, how does this happen? And people aren't marching for freedom, they're not marching to get the globalists out of our country, they're but for certain things. And I think this is also, you address this in your book, which is emotional triggers, and I think people have to realize how much more power they have within themselves. Like, luckily you found that Navy SEAL, but then you wrote down in your book all the tools that you learned from that. But I think people, and they're not done going into 2024. We're watching it now already, divide and conquer, bringing this, there's this shooting, then it's all fear, fear, fear. There's what's going on in Israel, fear, fear, fear. You know, this is a manipulation of that is emotional. And I think, because you talk about your childhood too in here, and your healing, and your, I know your wife was really helpful. But, you know, if you could just talk quickly about, because it's in the book and I want people to buy the book, but about the ability to stop yourself from letting your emotional and your triggers take over, and kind of taking a step back and assessing what's really going on. Because I think we have a huge problem right now with people being, it's just, they've been so beat down and demoralized with the fire hose of information that they don't have those tools that you're talking about. Maybe that, you know, they can stop and say, well, maybe I'm being triggered, and this isn't organically coming from inside. It's actually coming from outside. So if you could say anything about that, I want people to buy the book and they can read how to do that. But I think that's a really important thing people need to, you know, put in their toolbox right now.
Yeah, no, I totally, totally hear that. Totally hear that, Mel. Well, you know, it's interesting, Mel. So one of the things that I learned was that from working with this Navy SEAL was that, first of all those things like fear and shame and self-doubt and sort of anger at people, or in sadness too, like all of those things, they're rooted in stress and trauma. And all of that stress and trauma literally lives within our bodies. Like, it's literally stored in our tissues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I worked with him, I was able to get rid of 99.5% of it for me, right, from doing that. But, you know, not everyone can do that. Not everyone has the same path. And what can you do if, you know, if maybe you don't have the resources, or you don't have the time, or you want to do something, but you're not sure where to start? So I actually been really inspired by my wife's book, and her book is Emerging from Darkness. And, you know, one of the things that she says in that book is that a way for us, right, to raise our consciousness and to raise our vibration. And I want to say consciousness, because it's not about people often think, and I myself thought before I worked with him, that it's all about mastering your emotions up here. But that's actually totally crap. It's actually about your being, right? It's not like, if you're working up here, it's too late. Okay. It's about your being, like your state of being, your state of existence, your literal, you know, connection with your environment around you, and kind of the earth that God has created, like everything in nature. It's about your state of being. And Brianna, in her book, one of the things she mentions is that a way that you can raise your vibration that is good for doing this, which will raise your consciousness, is to be sure to spend time doing things you enjoy. And doesn't mean you have to be good at them or anything. Only thing that matters is, do you enjoy them? Because as you're drawing from our you know, from the fabric of our atmosphere and kind of our energetic field, as you're drawing joy inside of yourself, which is what happens when you do things you enjoy, you're actually raising your vibration, which raises your awareness and your connection to nature and to God and to the universe. And, you know, and that's one of the ways that you can do that. I personally do specific like isometric exercises or stretches that are about getting stress and tension, daily accumulated stress and tension out of my body so that I can keep my vibration as high as possible and I can stay as clear as possible and serve as my fellow human beings, my Floridians, my family, my wife, my kids, everyone around me as powerfully as possible. So that's what I do. And my hope actually is that eventually, in terms of teaching these methods to people who want access to them so that they can experience more freedom, so they can experience more peace, so they can experience more distance from things like fear and sadness and self-doubt and anger and all that stuff and frustration and self-judgment and judgment of other people and all that stuff. My hope is that I actually will be able to eventually spend more time doing that to be able to provide that to people who want it.
Yeah.
But so those are my thoughts there.
No, that's amazing. And that's what makes you, I think, so special, because we're going to have to rebuild the entire medical system. Everyone knows it from the inside out. It's got to kind of be gutted. It's got to be a little more open-mindedness, a little less financial or NGO or manipulation, and a lot more thinking about what we're not addressing. And what you're talking about is one of those things I believe by design was never allowed to be addressed by the powers that be. And you're somebody who brings them both together so beautifully. And it's so important. And I am having on your wife this week. I want people to know, and she'll share a little bit more, because you guys did this journey together, which is amazing and great, because we also need examples of good relationships. So yeah, we'll talk about that too. So can you tell my audience where to find your book, how to follow you? I know you're just getting started. I know you're going to eventually do that, but between now and then, I know you're going to be a big part of rebuilding the medical system so that it is actually healthcare and not something else. So tell my audience where you are.
Yeah, well, you can go to Amazon or Barnes and Nobles to get the book. And then on Twitter, we've got a Florida Surgeon General account that you can see the kind of things that we're doing on the there in Florida.
Great.
And
we'll put out the links below. And I highly recommend his book, because we're coming into a rough season between now and the 2024 election. And people really have to have some tools to get through it without losing their equilibrium and their good health. So thank you so much, sir. I will see you again. And say hello to your wife. And God bless you and your family. I know it's a team effort over there. Thank you so much.
God bless you guys too.
Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America first company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELK. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, MELK Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile and we hope you do too. Thank you so much. The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it, and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter, and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is going to look like. I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay, we the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started.